Hey everyone, it's Tronster here in the basement of the Geek House for another episode of the Basement Game Dev Podcast. I have across from me my co-host, Brett Dorley.
How's it going?
And on the couch for this episode, we have our special guest, Eric Ruth.
Hello people, how are you?
All right, and also just hanging out in the background, we've got Gabe Pendleton of Baltimore Gamer, and Eric's fiance is going to keep him in check or not in check.
Yeah, she's over there. She keeps me in many things. I'm not sure check is any of them, but
all right. Excellent. And for this episode, we want to talk about many things, Eric. Those who know Eric will be excited to hear us delve deeper, and those who don't, you're going to want to go and keep listening to find out why Eric is such a interesting character
and devilishly handsome.
That too. Sorry, ladies, he's already taken.
That's true.
And
by Gabe.
Gabe is a little uncomfortable now. There is some touching going on the couch. Let's talk about announcements real quick, though. In June 17th to 19th, up in New York, the Games for Change Festival is happening. And you can find out more about that on gamesforchange.org. And we hope in a future podcast to be talking a little bit about games and ethics. And that's pretty much what the Games for Change Festival is all about, just to talk about morality in games and some of the harder subjects about games and how they can actually impact and influence society. And before we also go into the topic, just a quick recap. We had 1 month off. There was some recovery from GDC. And I'm trying to think if there are any big news from GDC that was interesting to anyone. Like, does anyone remember hearing anything on like Kotaku Joystick or from colleagues who attended?
I think it was pretty run of the mill this year. I don't remember any huge announcements. I mean, we have heard about the Xbox One since your last podcast, but that's the only big news I think I can come up with.
Yeah, there was a little talk of the PlayStation, because I believe the PlayStation was just announced right before GDC, right?
Yeah, we got a glimpse of the controller then, I think, yeah.
Yeah, or was it right after? It was around the time, but there was nothing special about next-gen development.
Yeah, the one thing I do want to go and talk about, and it's very important to Gabe and I, is both Gabe and I are on the chair, or I'm the chair, and Gabe's also on the board of the Baltimore IGDA, was a little bit of a hubbub, and I don't even know if I should bring it up. I mean, enough time has kind of passed that no one's really been talking about it, but it was just, what should I even really say about that? I mean, it was just kind of, I felt some people got upset, and should rightfully got upset for like people dressed kind of scantily clad at a party. I actually was at the party. I don't remember seeing...
Was this the GDC party?
This was the GDC party.
Just clarifying.
And it was... The whole fact that the IGDA wanted to throw a party to go and celebrate all the members, and in throwing this party, there's only limited funds. They wanted to use them appropriately. They got approached by a sponsor to go and help them throw the party. And even though the IGDA had a set rules of guidelines or mm-hmm. of conduct, the sponsor had their own rules and they did not mesh. So at this event that was IGDA branded, there were some women that were dressed slightly scantily clad. It wasn't awful, but it also was not, I wouldn't say it was decent.
Yeah, it wasn't appropriate, but it wasn't the worst thing in the world
right,
either.
Right, you know. So, and that's really important because this industry is becoming better, becoming increasingly equal in gender roles. There's a lot of women sitting there as well as guys. And the head of the IGDA right now, the national organization, is a woman. And so some people were upset, and you know, she was not pleased with it. She made a public statement on the website, and no one in charge of the IGDA was happy about it, but there were some people who blasted the IGDA. And Gabe's pointing out people, I'm not going to say their names, but some people blasted the IGDA, and that... I mean,
unfairly, that, no less.
And that's my point. I mean, if anyone knows those people behind the IGDA, they know they did not have anything to do with that. They did not approve of it and would hopefully take action against it. And the official statement that came out of the IGDA from that, I think, showed the commitment to not allowing events like that happen. But a lot of people, I don't know, I was just very disappointed in a lot of people who have been so good for the industry and so influential, blasting the IGDA as if it was like knowingly had done this bad action and not realize, okay, sometimes you make mistakes. Sometimes you partner with someone with mistakes. And really the action should be judged on, well, how does someone come back from those mistakes versus...
Yeah, when something's done, it's done. It's all about how you respond to the action, be it defensively or trying to, you know, promote or prove that you can do better than that. Hey, we made a mistake in hiring people that went behind our back. No big deal. We all learn from it. Let's move forward and no one else has to be hurt.
Right. So I agree with that completely. Brett, are you, any thoughts on all the stuff that went down?
I pretty much ignored it. It didn't really seem relevant to me, so I didn't care.
And that too, a lot of, yeah, okay, so.
Whatever, it was a party at GDC. I would rather look at the articles that came out of, this is the new shader technique, or, you know, these are, you know, I saw that it was there, but it was one of those things where I didn't pay any attention to it.
Right, I mean, at GDC as a whole, that's true too. Like, some of the stuff, I did attend GDC. I got to go and hear the creator of Crystal Castles talk about how that got developed at Atari. I was totally geeking out. It was a pretty good time for hearing some of the talks. And some organizations through good parties, where Brett works at wargaming.net, was probably the most laser, I don't know what you'd call it, laser hosting event. There were lasers all over the place. They were shooting every which direction. Every color. Wargaming.net throws a good GDC party.
Did anybody lose an eye from all the lasers?
You know, I think there was enough Grey Goose around that they probably would not have minded losing an eye if it happened. They wouldn't have felt anything. So, but okay, so we've talked enough about everything else. Let's now talk about Eric. And Eric Ruth, give us your background. Tell us who you are. How do you describe yourself to someone if they're like, you're at an event and they say, so, what do you do?
Like I said, my name is Eric Ruth. My independent game company is Eric Ruth Games. It's very easy to remember. Most people actually know me as Eric Ruth of Eric Ruth Games. Like, that's like my whole name, like long. I'm 31 years old. I've been video game developing for the past 8 years now, independently. I've gotten a chance through that time to meet and be a part of many groups, including the IGDA. I've met and befriended a lot of people in and around the industry, including Tronster. And I have to say, it's a wonderful place with a lot of wonderful people. I've been learning and growing every year since my day one of giving it a shot. And I program in GML, which is the Game Maker Studio Engine by Yo-Yo Games of Dundee, Scotland, who I have a great working with relationship with now. In fact, I got to spend 2 months in Scotland with them, working at their office and meeting all the guys and just talking game dev stuff and learning about Game Maker and some neat upcoming things, which, of course, I'm not going to specify now. But it was just a phenomenal event with them. I had a great time. They're a big fan of my work, and they seem to think that it's a good example of what Game Maker can do, because sadly, it's been around for a long time, and in its original iteration by game developer Mark Overmars, it was essentially like a toy, like a tool toy to sort of play around with game developing. But ever since it was bought by Sandy Duncan a couple of years ago, he brought on a team of people that's been slowly growing over time to work on it, to bring it into the more professional spotlight, including about half of the original Lemmings developers.
No way, really?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Michael Daly and Russell Kay are the two lead developers on the new Game Maker Studio projects, and they were the lead developers on Lemmings. I even, while I was in Scotland, got to see the Purple House of where Lemmings was developed in the attic. So it was a fun tour for me. So I can't say enough good things about those guys. They're phenomenal.
Wow. Did they just? So are you just sitting at home making a game and a phone rings and they're like, hey, we're Game Maker. We want to bring you to Scotland. Come on over.
Funny story. We were just talking about GDC. No, I met them at GDC. I was working with Ben Walsh with Pure Bang Games at the time. And he had scored us a meeting with the Game Maker guys. He's like, your stuff is so good. They've got to see it. So basically, he just scored us a meeting for them to meet with us, talk to us a little bit, show them my work. We showed them some demos of some stuff. They were floored. I mean, they loved it. Sandy Duncan's jaw was on the ground, and he said, you know, this is the greatest, man, this is just phenomenal. So we had a great working relationship right off the bat. I've known them at that point for months. And then I talked to Michael Daly on Skype, and he said, you know, we just got to get you over here, man. There's just, I mean, you're such a, you know, you're such a great game developer with Game Maker. So if we can just teach you some more things and get you on the right track, man, you're going to be. So that's what we did. I went over there, learned a lot, as well as had fun, and got to see Scotland for the first time, which is a beautiful country. And like I said, that was treated like gold. I've got a whole lot of more information in regards to what I can do with Game Maker now versus what I'm going to be able to do shortly in the near future with new iterations. And I'm very excited about working more with those guys and with the engine. So,
you go, Brett.
What are some of the projects that you showed off at that time?
That made them like it so much? Yeah. Well, they had, I think they had mentioned that they had seen some of my more famous projects, which were some fan games I did, like the D-Make series, the Pixel Force series, which was Pixel Force Left 4 Dead, Pixel Force DJ Hero, and Pixel Force Halo, which are all modern franchises that have been reimagined as 8-bit Nintendo games. So I tried my best I could to make those games as 8-bit as possible, including using the 24 color palette, four channels of sound, number of sprites on screen at once, although I broke that rule a little bit to make some better gameplay in a few projects. But I tried as best I could while having as much integrity for the projects to make a good game based on franchises, but kicking it back to old school. So they had seen those, and then I showed them some other demos, including a Valve fighting game, which I also got to show off to Valve while I was at that GDC. Robin Walker, creator of Team Fortress 2, sat down and checked it out. Really enjoyed it. I have a nice relationship with Valve now. Great guys over there as well. And what else did I show? Maybe a drop-in music demo, which is a music game specifically designed for touch devices, iPod, iPhone, you know, things like that.
So when you met these companies over at GDC itself, did you just go up to their booth and say, hey, I'm Eric Ruth, or did you set up something ahead of time to meet?
We set up something ahead of time. Like I said, Ben mostly took care of the arranging the meetings, and once we got down, I just talked to them like some old college friends. And you know, there's so much professionality in terms of what people are willing to do and say at GDC and places like that sometimes just a, hey man, how's it going, you know, we'll go a long way over, hello, nice to meet you, I represent, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a little bit more of a warming experience, I guess, than just your genuine meet and greets. So, like I said, it all ended well. Got some great relationships and friends out of it, some great partners in the industry. And, yeah, I have to say it was a positive experience all around.
Awesome. When did you start working with Game Maker, or even when did you start making video games? Was Game Maker your first and only, or have you been making games even longer?
Oh, I've been... The first games I programmed on my own were on my TI-92 calculator. So TI Basic was my first language, where every loop had to be dictated, you know, where you'd have to set up a coding chunk that would be labeled, you know, A, you know, and then at the end you'd have to say go to A because it didn't loop automatically. So, and familiar to Sid Meier, the old character variables. So everything was like A, B, and A, D, and CT and stuff like that for all the labeling. So as somebody who works at Firaxis, you certainly have seen Sid's
he's very exact with his variable names. They can be very short.
but yeah, so there was a lot of that back then. And then I got into Visual Basic a little bit when I first got a hold of my dad's laptop he used for work a long time ago. Before we even had a mouse for the thing, which is the little eraser nub. Remember, like right in the middle of the keyboard? See, Brett's not. He's
the,
like, oh,
the
yeah.
Red little IBM thing.
Damn right.
We had a dirty name for that. Well, I mean, as a high schooler with all of our geek friends and from the BBS scene, there's a dirty name. Go on, though.
But you found it, and most people would be very impressed that you found it. Oh, Gabe, I love you, buddy.
Gabe's losing it on the couch, but...
Well, that's where most people lose it, am I right?
All right, man. You know, what's funny is we don't have any alcohol here either. This might be, I think, our first dry podcast.
They're all dry to me, trust me.
Well, okay, I know. Well, you're here to keep us in check, but I'm just thinking, like, maybe we need the alcohol because that's what prevents the podcast from getting too dirty.
I'm not sure that helps, but okay.
Okay, so you were talking about your dad's laptop.
Yep. So, so that was my first time actually programming, not on a calculator, but, you know, on an actual device that could, you know, handle more than like 1 kilobyte of RAM. and from there it just grew. And for a while I actually stopped doing coding because to this day, I still don't think I'm a very good coder. I mean, I know enough to like make my stuff work and get by, but if you were to come to me and be like, Eric, I love you. I've got you a guaranteed job at Firaxis, any job you want. What is it? Tell me right now. I'd be like, not coder. That would not be it. So I just got more into art and design. I started getting into Photoshop a lot during that time, that absence away from actual coding. So I spent my time focusing on other talents, music. A lot of people knew me by the name DJ Potato. Was a popular moniker.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you spin music or did you produce?
I produced it, and I also did some rapping and worked with some musicians, including the famous Thomas Howard Lichtenstein, who was a famous DDR musician, was in a lot of their songs, in-house and original. Cool guy. I got to work with Bridget Jackson from, I believe she, well, she's originally from here, but then she's moved to like Georgia. And she's a talented pop singer down there, and she's got a record contract with a local group, and lovely, lovely lady. But I got a chance to meet and speak with all these great people, including, Jackazid, who is now a very famous European DJ who spins at a lot of their big clubs. And I met him when he was just 16, and we used to do music stuff together then. And now he's literally headlining clubs across the seas. So good for him. He's a great guy, very talented. So I did a lot of focus basically on art and music at the time when I was away from coding, but eventually got into it when I ran into Game Maker 5, the fifth iteration, which was back in 2006. And I've been running through every iteration since, and now we're up to Studio, which is technically Game Maker 9, because that's went 8 to Studio. And it's changed a lot. I mean, I've learned as I keep growing with it as it grows. And I've been sticking to that because, while a lot of people don't like it and say that it's still a little cheesy and still not quite as professional as it, you know, may eventually well get to be, I can get things working quickly. I can make it look good. And, as I was demoing Hauntlings to you guys before this podcast began, even Brett was watching the video. And while, the game that we'll be talking about shortly is not exactly his cup of tea, he did point out the compliment that is an extremely polished beta for an indie developer. So, yeah. Thank you for that compliment, sir.
I wonder if you could go and tell us a little bit about Hauntlings, because I only heard about it a few weeks ago when you first put up your, it's not a Kickstarter, right? It's Indiegogo?
Yep, Indiegogo.
So what are you doing? Like, what's the game, and how are you trying to fund the game now?
Well, usually when I make games, I tend to release them for free, which, believe it or not, doesn't buy a lot of ramen. I know that's weird. But I'm really trying to make my game development efforts work as some sort of a career, and I'm clearly not trying to get rich, as even very small amounts of money will make me happy. As long as I can cover my ends and do what I love, I'm good. That's it. I don't need to make any more than that, you know? So with this project, Hauntlings, which is a brawler slash MOBA combination in retro style, it's all done pixel art. And I'm sure we can link to screenshots or video, or I assume from this podcast, so that people can see it. I'm hoping to achieve a certain amount of money so that the game can be online playable. I want to be able to make it so that there's matchmaking and online server stuff. So essentially, it's not just a local multiplayer game like all my other past stuff, but this will be truly online co-op multiplayer. So that way, you know, the most people can access it and all of the good things that it brings for, you know, not having to be together in the same room.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, and I have the page up on my satellite Macintosh over here. And so you've got this, again, it's not a Kickstarter, I guess a funding.
Crowdfunding is what they call it. That's the generic term for it, is crowdfunding.
Right. And so what are you doing to reach out to your fan base right now? Or does your fan base, do they know that you're doing this game, or?
It doesn't seem so. It's actually gotten less hits than I expected. Of course, I'm used to just making something and putting it out there and then not forgetting about it per se, but like let it take its own steam. But in this case, since there's a timer on when the funds can be delivered and done by, you know, I have to be a little more proactive with my, I guess you could say, marketing. Mm-hmm. So what I'm doing now is trying to go around to all the easy stuff, you know, Twitter and Facebook and getting some of it out that way. And of course, a lot of my friends have been retweeting it and some fans have been retweeting it. So, I mean, it's making some rounds. Joystick.com was kind enough to post about it. Sadly, they posted about it at 10:30 in the morning on a Monday. So didn't have the biggest audience at that moment, but that's okay. It's no big deal. I certainly appreciate them regardless of what kind of numbers it does or doesn't bring. So they've always been good to me in the past and talked about a lot of my other projects. So yeah, I'm just trying to make sure that enough people see it. So if you want to donate, excellent. That certainly helps the project. If you don't, that's okay. I'm no love lost, but I want to make sure people at least see it to make that decision rather than the game coming up short because no one had heard about it.
Right. I'm actually surprised it hasn't gotten traction. I'm hoping that there just needs to be a tipping point too, because your previous games, I know, has got major press, not only from Joystick, but I think Kotaku's even Kotaku. Went to and...
Polygon was kind enough to do an article with me about Hauntlings. They did an interview, which they posted. Yeah, they were real good about it. A lot of love from those guys. So thank you, Dave, from Polygon. And they were kind enough to do an actual interview and link to some of the videos. And I'm just trying to, like I said, just trying to get it out there at this point.
Cool. So if you have your following, and if they happen to be listening to this podcast too, and they're thinking, well, whether or not they should pull the trigger to donate some for Hauntlings, like, what would you go and tell them to sell them on, like, yeah, this is an investment you want to make because it's going to go and help take your game to the next level?
Well, the good news is that what I'm offering a lot of people, which a lot of Indiegogo or Kickstarter crowdfunding campaigns haven't done, is the day that the campaign ends, everybody that donates, regardless of how much you've donated, gets a free copy of the alpha. Like that day, by the end of that day, you will have a copy of the game you can play yourself. And like I said, that's just a couple bucks. Just get you one of those. So a lot of people, a lot of the games that you see out there, people go, well, please donate. And then you'll eventually, get the game. And of course, in my case, you will eventually get the full game for free as well. But sometimes you want a little more than wait 8-9 months for a game. And I understand that as somebody who likes to get my claws on things early. I figure there are other people like me, so I'm giving them that opportunity to get a hold of the game, a functioning multiplayer, all four players, local co-op game right away. The beta you guys saw earlier, plus, there's still time I'm working on it. Should it still have another couple characters even added to it and some things cleaned up. And so it should be a good, like an actually very solid alpha, not just, like a little thing, but it should be enough that you can actually play.
Can you go into some details about some of the differences between your MOBA versus some of the more popular ones like LOL and Dota 2 and stuff?
Oh, sure. Like I said before, thank you, Brett, that it is a MOBA hybrid as a brawler. For those of you that remember Final Fight, Streets of Rage, those are that type of gameplay mixed with the MOBA team-based pushing into each other's base. So basically what it's like is it's a single lane MOBA. Most MOBAs have three lanes, top, mid, or bottom lane, that you then divide your team across those lanes and then push in again in those lanes to try and take control of your other player's base. In this case, it's just one lane. It's 1v1 or 2v2. And, there's a robust selection end product of of original characters. Each character has four abilities. Which are the similarities to the MOBAs that you see out in the market now. But the difference is it's a much easier game to jump into. MOBAs are notoriously difficult. They have a learning curve. Some even describe it as a learning wall that you have to scale just to get any progress in those products. Whereas this, if you've played a beat-em-up, you know what you're doing right off the bat. That's end of story. So you can walk right into the game and have a much easier grasp on what it is and what your goals are. Because it's not click to move for the people that would rather control their characters, as we talked about earlier. You've got that bonus because your characters, like just like Streets of Rage, you control your character with a D-pad and your attack buttons. It is also designed with a lot of simplicity in terms of its like HUD, its UI. With League of Legends, for example, a great game. I'm not going to take anything from it. I enjoy playing it quite regularly myself. There's a lot of variables to follow, a lot of shop items that you got to memorize. How do you buy this? At what point? When does this build into that? Whereas here, the shop is only accessible once you have perished briefly in Hauntlings, and there are four things that you can upgrade of yours. There is your physical damage, magical damage, or what I'm calling spectral damage in this game, to keep it thematically going. Mm-hmm. And then you got movement speed and defenses. That's it. It's as simple as that. Nothing builds into anything else. You just, if you're playing with your character and you're like, man, I can't quite get away, I need more movement speed, next time you die, pop some extra points into movement speed.
Now, you know? when you iterate on the actual game design, have you like added one of these in, or could one of them eventually go away if it doesn't work out, or how do you keep playing with these type of variables to figure out where the fun is in the game?
Well, I mean, since it's alpha, clearly anything can come and go on a whim, essentially. But I've been playing as best of my ability. I've had a group of friends who come over and play with me just to make sure the game is fun and that I'm not taking away anything that could add to it or adding anything that makes it too complicated or boring. So we've had a lot of luck. I mean, they've given me some great feedback as we've played. Usually I just watch them play while I sit back with a notepad and, you know, take the notes. All right, that doesn't work. Got a bug there. That's overpowered, you know, that kind of thing.
How often do you do that with your friends? Like once a week or once a month? Or?
Once every 2 weeks it's been about. And I will have those same friends come up again before the end of the Kickstarter event, which will promote. Because every time they come over, I also take videos of the gameplay so that people can really see how it's coming along. Which is another thing about my my campaign that I've been enjoying is I've actually been able to update it with not just information, as a lot of the crowdfunding projects out there tend to have people just chiming in. Okay, we did great this week. Here's what we worked on. With me, I'm just flat out, I'm adding new videos. Here's a whole spotlight video of this character. Here's a character I just finished. Here's a new video showcasing an entire match unedited. Here's a new video, you know. So every week I've been adding one or two new videos along with information updates. So there's just constantly new things for the people who are interested in the project, be they contributors or not, to be able to see. So I want to make sure everyone's always in the loop and up to date.
How much time have you already spent on the project, and how much longer do you think you have to reach some of the final goals that you have for the project?
Well, I've been doing it about a month and a half, like 6-7 weeks, something like that, which has given us two complete modes, three complete maps, three complete characters, and including everything from title and select screen all the way through, you know, game over and that kind of stuff. So there's quite a bit I actually got done in that time period.
Well, you did it for the code. What about the art and music? Did you?
That includes it.
So you did the art, you did the music.
Well, I put it, the music is placeholder right now because okay. That is, I specifically have worked with that group before who's done that, Midnight Syndicate, also a group of great guys. See, I told you, once I got in the industry, I meet all these great people, love them to death. And I worked with them briefly on a game called Coral Slayer I did a little while ago with Pure Bang Games. And I am now reaching out to them for the soundtrack to this one. And that's part of where the money in turn is going too. I have to license that stuff. But sound effects are all mine, though. Those are all original.
Nice. Let's see. So we're almost done here.
Sure.
Wrapping up, looking at Gabe to see if there's anything interesting to add there. And I guess at the very end here, I just want to say, you know, we've got this game coming out. You've learned a lot. You've put out more than a dozen games. Like you said, like close to 30, was
it? Close to 30.
So if you look back at the first games that you were doing, or at least the first game maker based games, and you look at Hauntlings now, like what do you see has changed the most in terms of even your coding, but your game design? Like what is the biggest lessons taking away, or things that you cringe at looking at your old work that you wish you could have picked up quicker on this road?
Well, when trying to sell a game to somebody, and I don't mean literally like for money, but I mean like showing them a game and making them either want to be interested in playing it or not, there are certain things that you have to try to do to make them want to play. And there are little things that, looking back on my first Game Maker game, was Return of the Space Cowboy, which is available for download on my site, which is www.ericruthgames.com, for those of you not aware. And that project was fun, and thinking back to it, I'm like, I remember how much trouble I was having just trying to make a player walk like in a direction. So this is just bringing me back to there certainly has been a lot of time has passed between now and then. But I would say that like little details, things that you don't think about right off the bat, but make things look more polished or make them look shinier. Little effects like we're talking about like the the ultimate of the character Dollface, the little girl with that explained to you guys earlier with the her corpses like spinning around her. Each of the corpses has like individual, like they kind of phase in and out and they have a glow on them. And while you don't look at them in the first time you see them and say, oh, I noticed that, that's great. But if you had seen one without that extra effort in and one with it, the one with it would be noticeably better. You know, it's one of those things where you not necessarily know what makes what you're looking at better or how you're controlling it feel better, but you'd know the difference if it wasn't there, kind of a thing. And that is probably one of the biggest things I've learned between Return of the Space Cowboy, which everything that's in there graphically and code wise is complete necessity. And there's no extra like polish at all. There's nothing, just it works. And that was fine. And end of story versus Hauntlings, which has lots of special things and little details that make characters pop a little more, makes the UI a little neat looking, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Very good. Well, that's about it for this episode of the Basement Game Dev Podcast. Make sure you pop on over to ericruthgames.com to go and see a whole bunch of free games you can download.
Yep,
and
all free downloads, yep.
Other work that Eric has done. And if you're listening to this before June 15th, 15th, go to Indiegogo.com and type in Hauntlings. That's a plural, Hauntlings. And, you know, throw a few bucks in there. You'll get the alpha and you'll see just some of the great work that Eric is doing on his latest game. Thank you much, Eric.
Thank you, Tronster. Thank you, Brett.
Till next time, guys. Keep making games.